Accession number 23195, Reel 11.
Mr. Bolton, Reel 11. We've got to the point where you've got to Secunderabad around about September, October perhaps, 1945. And you were to stay there until August. Did anything particular else happen before you left in August, or was it a matter of routine?
Right. Indeed, very little at all happened. Now, because life was so featureless, I find it quite hard to think now what on earth we were doing. We had the usual daily parade and did little jobs around our equipment and so on.
What would a typical day be like then, perhaps? Do you remember?
We would parade, we would be allocated some sort of little tasks to do. We would do those very quickly.
What kind of tasks?
Well, I suppose there's always maintenance of wireless equipment and so on, although it kind of required very little maintenance because we really weren't using it, or very rarely. Might have been a bit of battery charging for any use of the radio which had taken place. I suppose we operated a switchboard. I think we must have done. I must have taken my turn at that. But again, so little comes back to me of that. And the next months are really rather featureless. Life was quiet. It was quite comfortable. Our biggest problem was that the water was always scarce. There was enough to drink, no problem there. But when it came to the shower, which we would all have liked to have had every day, sure enough, there was a bath area on each floor. And there were showers and there were taps. But for most of the time, very little, if anything, came out of the taps. Most of the day, there was no water supply at all. And the water was obtained by, when it was sort of finally turned on, by our boys, natives, pumping away and filling up a tank, which then supplied water for a shower. But as far as I can recall, we were quite lucky if we managed to get a shower once a week, a proper shower, plenty of water. Otherwise, it was always dry. And that was our main problem, really. Luckily, our washing was taken care of, our laundry, by the boys. But personal hygiene was a bit difficult. Now, this all went on for quite a long time. It was all becoming rather boring, and our chief problem really was in finding anything very much to do. So one day on the notice board where we had our daily orders pinned up, a notice appeared from, I suppose, some sort of army HQ, calling for volunteers to be transferred from India to the Middle East. Presumably some sort of manpower crisis had developed over there, and they wanted to shift troops around. So I had two good friends there, three of us operators, were always together. We used to go out in the evening together and so on. So we looked at this notice and said, ha, hoo-ha. And we decided to do the thing which generally you were always warned in the army never to do, to volunteer for something. Because generally speaking, you ended up in a far worse situation you started off in, and you wish you hadn't. But anyway, we put our names down, we applied for a transfer to the Middle East. And shortly afterwards, we were told that was okay. So, once more, we were going to be on the move.
This was August 47, this 46. Would,
that's right, yes.
What about the trip to the Middle East?
For this trip, we sent off on our own, armed with travel warrants and instructions, put on the train back to Bombay, which took us about 36 hours. But it's a very pleasant trip, because being only a few of us, we did our own thing and somehow organised meals. I think we were able to get meals on the train, some sort of food, and I suppose we had some paid, or some ration card, or some authority. So the journey was pleasant. Once in Bombay, we were taken down to the quay and put on board a Cunard liner this time. We had a nice red and black funnel. I have a feeling it was called the the Mauritania or the Aquitania. I can't really remember for sure, but anyway, it was a Cunard liner, and it was quite comfortable. And instead of having hammocks, it was fitted on the troop decks with bunks, which were much much pleasanter. So we had a fairly short voyage of, I don't know, 7 days or so, then back through the canal. The voyage itself was very pleasant, and I don't recall any fatigues apart from cleaning one's own deck. I think we got quite good food. It was a much pleasanter voyage than on the outward one, on the Empress of Bermuda, Queen of Bermuda.
Where did you go to?
So we disembarked at Port Suez. And yes, we reported there to the sort of local travel authorities, army travel authorities, and were sent off to the station Port Said. And I said Port Suez just now. I should have said Port Said. I'm getting slightly punched right now, I think. And the Port Said onto a train, Egyptian train. This was quite normal carriages, and the trains have windows. So once inside and settled down on the seat, we pulled the windows open and leaned out to see what was going on and watch all the business on the platform. Lots of small urchins came up selling things. And we'd been given some Egyptian money, so we were able to buy. Enthusiastic arguments and bartering took place as we tried to buy things. And we suddenly became aware that this was fraught with danger, because I noticed that the newspapers were being pushed under our nose, the Cairo Times or whatever, and they were quite cheap. And I suddenly saw a newspaper being pushed up in the air, and on the end of it was a fountain pen, and it suddenly disappeared with the fountain pen. And I grabbed it. And we realized that what they were doing, under cover of the newspapers pushed into our faces, an incredible skill. These urchins were able to unhook a fountain pen, if you have one in your pocket, a bit showing, and with a bit of luck, they get it down into their own pocket. So from then on, we were much wiser, very careful what we did, because we were being robbed right and left, and we weren't careful. Next thing that happened, just after the train started, a couple of shots rang out from some part of the end of the train. What that betokened or what happened, I have no idea, I never did find out. But, it all was part of the extraordinary atmosphere which had developed in this train. So we proceeded southward slightly apprehensively. But I think after that it got quieter, and we had a usual quiet trip to Cairo. At Cairo, I seem to remember the place called Abbasia, which may have been a very big, I think it was a big military area, that's what it turned out to be, just on the edge of Cairo. And there we disembarked from the train. And the next thing, we were sent down to... in Cairo, we spent a few days in a staging camp, a transit camp, doing nothing. We were able to get into Cairo once or twice, I think. Yes, I remember marching out of the camp and being stopped by the pickets on the door and inspected to make sure your boots were shining and whatnot. And then there was a sort of Liberty vehicle, an army three-tonner with seats in the back was available, and we got on that and we were taken into Cairo and returned by the same route, so it made it easy. In Cairo, we wandered around the shops, which were very expensive, and found little of interest, apart from just being in a strange place and doing sightseeing. However, one day the army itself laid on a trip to see the pyramids, so we did genuine sightseeing, organized, and went out to Giza, and were conducted. I remember going round a pyramid with a guide, not so much going round it as going inside it. The Great Pyramid, we got as far as the interior burial chamber. That got quite exciting, because went into a fairly large rocky passage, but after a little while the ceiling suddenly came much lower, and we had several yards to go on all fours practically, with the chap in front of us, the guide, whom we didn't really trust very much. I mean, you'd be after backsheesh, the name comes back to me, backsheesh. Anyway, it was quite interesting in the end, and had a good look round, and that forestalled a visit I made some 10 years ago when my wife and I went back to Egypt. Well, went back, we went to Egypt and had a holiday there. Went round the Great Pyramid once more. And we saw the Sphinx, of course, and it was all rather interesting. Then
this was August, September, would it be?
Yes, I think we're now... let's see where we are. It all gets rather confusing. So I'd arrived in India in 1945, of course, and so we're right through 1946. We're now moving towards the end of that year.
You said you left India in August.
Right. Then, so I suppose September, roughly, we're settling down. We're taken from Cairo, now on a posting, and went down to Ismailia, which is something of a cantonment place, a semi-military town, on the shores of, I think, the Great Salt Lake or the Great Bitter Lake or whatever. And indeed, it was on the shore of a very large lake. Small town, nicely set out, lots of palm trees.
Who were you posted to at Ismailia? Or was it just a staging post?
No, we were actually posted there. We were there for not very long, because since we arrived there, we joined a unit, which was, now it comes back to me, third division, which we come across in the European campaign. Well, so that had been shifted to the Middle East.
Who were you attached to within third?
I was attached to Brigade HQ there.
Yeah, which brigade?
Was that brigade? No, sorry, I think it was Div HQ. So I was confused a while ago, talking about Divisional HQ. Yes, I think we actually joined Divisional HQ Signals. And did very little, but we were given to understand that we were shortly about to move with the division up into Palestine, as it was then known. And I can remember so little of what we did in the short time we were in Ismailia. All I remember was, again, a good naffy there, and where we spent much of our time in the evenings. And it had a gramophone and a few decent records, so I enlarged my burgeoning knowledge of classical music.
Now, when did they move then? They moved into Palestine. What month would that be about? Was it before Christmas?
I think it was just before Christmas, so probably December.
So you'd been at Ismailia about 2 or 3 months?
Yeah, I'm not sure it was even as long as that. We may have probably moved off a bit sooner. I doubt we were there more than about 6 weeks, 6 or 8 weeks. But it's...
So you were in Cairo about 8 weeks as well?
Yes, yes.
Okay, where were you moving to in Palestine?
So in Palestine, well, first of all, we had the trip to Jerusalem itself. Which was largely driven, driving through desert, which was a new experience, I suppose, in a way. Of course, not much of an experience, very little to see. So we drove through endless sand dunes. The first part of the trip near the sea and then turned inland through sort of rocky, semi-mountainous areas. And then it got much better when we arrived in Palestine. We began to return to normal sort of civilization, sorry. And to Jerusalem, where we were allocated to Allenby Barracks. That was a large barrack area, very much been an army depot for many, many years.
What were the barracks like?
Our particular share of the barracks was a hutted area, so we were in quite decent huts there, with proper beds, single beds each, as it were. So that was quite comfortable. And we were now with that's about time. Yes, now that starts to come back to my memory. The main thing that I did there was man the telephone switchboard, which was next door to the orderly office. And that was a very routine duty, but just the usual.
Have they changed at all or developed, or were they still much as you described before?
I think I had a slightly upgraded switchboard there, as befitted a divisional HQ. Much bigger. The same. It's bigger, yes. Much the same principles. Slightly better. Slightly easier to operate. I think our hours of duty were quite civilized. I don't recall working at night. I had terrible problems with keeping awake. So I think it was sort of daytime job, almost 9 till 5, or possibly in the evening too. Our main customers being the staff there and the orderly office. And the, I suppose, quite senior staff there, presumably there's a general somewhere around. I think I had a general on my line, which is the first time I had such a senior rank to deal with. So I had to be a bit careful there. But life was fairly quiet, except that we were now the subject of attention from the Stern gang, was the one we always talked about. We always talked about the Stern gang, although whether there were other bodies who were engaged in the
fight. Could you understand what was going on in Palestine about the Arabs, about the
Yes, it was, yes, it was quite clear to us. I think there was a strong independence movement among the Israelis. I don't think we used the term Israeli at all at that time. We called the country Palestine. What we called the Jews, I think we just called them the Jews. It seems rather strange now. We talked about the Jews. And of course, any dealings we had with them, there was no problem.
And what were the Stern gang? What was the reputation of the Stern gang at the time?
It was pretty vicious. Whether this was before or after the next event, I'm not quite sure, but among other crimes, they kidnapped a British sergeant, I remember. Kidnapped him and tortured him. I think they killed him in the end. And there were occasional incidents, not many, but occasional things like that. But we were warned we were always at risk from stray shots being shot at. And we were put under strict orders that when we went out into Jerusalem, we went in a group of not less than four. So if you wanted to go out, you had to find three comrades to go with him. And we took our rifles with us. We remained armed. I rather suspect we didn't have any ammunition, which has so often happened in our unit. You take a rifle, but you didn't have any ammunition. But anyway, we were armed for show, if nothing else. By then, we'd been issued with the number 5 rifle, which was rather nice. At last, we saw a new model rifle. The ones we had during the war were number 4, after the Lee Enfields, replaced by a number 4 rifle, which was a cheap and cheerful mass-produced weapon. I remember the one I had, just to digress for a moment, the foresight, very necessary part of its equipment if I was going to use it, it was loose and it always kept falling out, and I lost it once for about a fortnight, had to send the rifle off to the armourer, get it fixed. So we didn't like the number 4, it was very crude, but the number 5 was a lovely job, very nice rifle, beautifully polished, and on the one occasion I went out on the range with this number 5, which I think was in Egypt, I got about 4 bullseyes out of several shots, because the rifle made it easy. So I could shoot after all that time. Okay.
So what happened? What was the sort of routine of life in Jerusalem at the Allenby Barracks?
I'd do a stint on the switchboard. So I'd parade. I think I got an early breakfast. I go for an early breakfast in the cookhouse. I go on duty about 8 o'clock. And then just do a 4-hour shift. I think we did 4 on and 8 off there. Which was on the whole quite busy. There was plenty of traffic going on because this was a rather active area with all the troop activity. And as I say, with the general on the line, I'd be a bit smart and careful. I think I kept my nose clean on the whole. But the next thing I remember quite clearly was once more, I'm sitting on the switchboard, once more an awful bang in the distance, but very loud and very nasty. And this was, since there was a great bang, and within seconds, every flap or light on my switchboard was dropping and blinking, and I was answering calls frantically. And it became obvious on what I was hearing, as you overhear, as you're putting through snatches of conversation, was that what was the name of the hotel?
King David.
Thank you. The King David Hotel had been blown up by the Stern Gang. Oh, you mentioned the Stern Gang. There were others as well, I think, other bodies, but we tended to call them all by the Stern Gang. It was the name which we remembered. I think they were probably few in number, but extremely tough and prepared to do anything. And they had put a quite sizable load of explosive into the hotel, which was entirely used as the military headquarters then, so it was full of troops. And there were a lot of casualties. And it was totally wrecked, as I recall seeing it. Mm-hmm. So That was a big incident.
Did you get, did that make you nervous? I mean, the Allenby Barracks must have been the target as well, you know.
Well, we were always slightly nervous. When we went out, we used to, looking over our shoulder in case there was somebody around wanting to shoot us. But I don't think it made much difference. We weren't really, certainly weren't scared. I think we were just cautious. And of course, Lumber with our rifles. And we'd be very careful to remember you've got the rifle. I even took them into the cinema. I remember putting the rifle under the seat. And much shoving and pushing to get it out again when we left the cinema. And so wherever we went, we carried a rifle. Perhaps we did have some bullets in it. I don't know, cartridges.
Anything else happened while you were there? We got there about December 46.
That's right, yes. I recall, I think we got a fairly decent Christmas, as far as rations went anyway, and something to eat. But
did
otherwise,
any special celebration?
No, I don't think so. Being a sort of, the point about Jerusalem, it's partly Jewish and partly Arab. We liked it very much. It was actually a beautiful city. I reckon I'd never seen such a splendid city. So much of it was very modern, and the sort of Arab quarter wasn't so good, but that was, I never went to it and didn't need to have to. The centre of Jerusalem had splendid shops and beautiful buildings, blocks of flats, and really was rather splendid. Lots and lots of traffic. So I was beginning to see traffic again, as we were concerned. And we liked it very much.
What happened
next? On the whole, life fairly uneventful. I don't recall any other Stern Gang incidents. There used to be occasional scares and some sort of exercises and chase them around, but I don't recall being involved in that much. So now I'm simply waiting for my time, and now knew that my mob number was approaching. My number was 50, and I've got to hear the various numbers being ticked off as drafts were sent home, and eventually my turn arrived, and I was my kit and I and three or four other chaps were put on a lorry, on a truck, and sent back all the way, I think, by truck to Port Said.
About, roughly speaking.
I think it was around about March.
So you've been there about 4 months?
Been there about 4 months. Yes, long enough to be acclimatised, to get to know the place quite well.
And from Port Said?
From Port Said, I went on board a Liberty ship, whose name I can't remember. I remember the one we went to Normandy on, the Empire Trader, but this one I can't remember at all. And we were due to go from there and due to arrive in Toulon in France. They'd by then established a standard route for leave-taking and general military movements. You embarked at Port Said, went down the Mediterranean, called in at Malta usually, and then from Malta to the French port, Toulon, and then went on a train from Toulon to Calais, right across France, which is what duly happened to us. On the way, though, we had a very nasty passage because a great storm got up, violent winds and thunderstorms, heavy rain, huge waves. The Liberty boat shot up and down and rolled from side to side and groaned and creaked, so we felt it was going to fall to pieces. I'm not really making it up, because we learnt when we got to Malta and we docked there and saw the local newspapers, and they said this was the worst storm since so-and-so, such a date, which is a good many years before. So we felt quite proud we'd survived a great storm in our Liberty boat. We didn't get ashore at Malta. We were there for several hours, I think, going there, just called a look-see at it. And then set sail again for Toulon, where we arrived about, I think, two or three days later. I think the entire trip was about a week crossing the Mediterranean. Second time we'd done it, we went been in the other direction. And at Toulon, went ashore, driven to the railway station, and put on a train there. Now, this time I had no trouble with the bad weather, because it was now the right time of year. It was springtime. So we had a pleasant trip across France. I think I had a comfortable berth, slept all right. And arrived at Calais about midday. Embarked shortly afterwards. A fairly comfortable trip across the channel this time. And from the channel, I just... that just reminded me from my notes. The train arrived, I think, at or near Aldershot. I suppose it had. I suppose the station at Aldershot must be. Yeah. And from there, we were driven in the three-tonner to a depot, which Aldershot was full, no doubt. First time I'd ever been to Aldershot, fortunately. Debob commenced immediately.
And that was, would that be April by then, or would it be March?
I think it was April, beginning of April.
And what was the demo, 1947, was the demob procedure for you?
As far as I recall, I think we arrived there and were taken straight to the sort of long sheds where the demobbing kit issue and so on took place. Or did we have a night there? But I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it did take place right away. So, okay, we arrived with our kit bag and so on, everything we possessed therein. Started off at one end of a long table, very much like what we'd done when I joined the army, when I was given items. This time, I think I handed them over. What happened?
You get the suit?
No, yes, the main thing was to get the suit, that's right. I can't remember whether we handed over, I suppose we kept our kit on, I don't know. If we dumped our kit, then at least we were ready to try on the suit, which I certainly remember trying on the suit. A little cubicles there, and there were rows of suits, rather like a Burton shop, rows and rows of coat hangers and suits on them, different sizes, and of course different colours and designs, patterns and whatnot. So I remember being let loose to go and choose one, and then sort of returned to the fitting point. But I suppose we're only there for a couple of hours, all told. So really, my memory is not very strong about this.
But a suit of a reasonable quality?
Yeah, I thought they were quite good. And indeed, I wore my demob suit for 3 or 4 years afterwards, and it held together quite well. It's not a bad suit at all.
Now, what were you to do when you came out of the army? I mean, you had a career, LCC. Did you go straight back to it?
Yes, I did. But I think I took quite a bit of leave first. And again, I got a lot of... demobilisation. I think I was officially on leave for at least a couple of weeks after I'd left the depot and got into civvies.
And were you able to settle back in at the LCC? Were you at the same level as when you left? I mean,
yes. The good thing which happened to me as well as regards the LCC was that throughout the war, throughout my time away from them when I was called up, after my call up, throughout my time in the army, they made up my pay. So my modest army pay was supplemented by, about 30 shillings a week or a couple of pounds, whatever one earned in those days, not a lot. And so that had all been banked in my absence, and I had quite a sum of money by the standards of those days. So that was very good.
Did you find it easy going back to that sort of job?
I think I did, yes. I didn't have any great problem. I went back to County Hall, which is a very big place, of course, still there, the head office. He welcomed me back and told me where I was going. Oh, yes, and then I settled down in an office there, in a personnel office. After that, yes, I returned to sort of duties I'd done before, different sort,
and you stayed with them for your whole career.
That's right. Now, at the time, they were running a scheme to. The scheme was to promote general clerical staff, of which I was one, onto a supervisory level and get promotion. And it was called a reconstruction examination, intended to rebuild the ranks of the council, because during the war most of the male staff had been called up. It was something like the rematriculation, but in fact it was much simpler. It was quite a simple examination, simple arithmetic, write an essay and then be interviewed. And in fact it was so easy that even after my years in the army I was able to do quite well on that. And the interview passed well as well. It was they were obviously very sympathetic to the returning troops, and no problem at all. And in any case, my job was guaranteed, so it had no real importance. But I did get promotion following that, so I got promotion on the